evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 28, 2019. Several managers of a security firm have been ordered to leave South Sudan.
We are not closing the company, but we are dealing with the culprit which are working badly to our people, which have been causing problems, because they have been reporting even the security matters, which does not concern them.
And a former editor of a newspaper who fled South Sudan says journalists continue to be harassed.
Media laws which are supposed to guide us, and the government, that is the media authority, are not following it. When a journalist falls in problem, the media authority is not following it. Second, we have also a national security at the printing press, which is not supposed to be there.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Juba City Council officials say the government has ordered the deportation of 20 foreign nationals working for Inside Security, a private security firm in Juba. Juba's deputy mayor is accusing the foreigners of exploiting South Sudanese and spying on the country. A lawyer representing the security firm says no official deportation letter was delivered to his clients. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Deputy Mayor Thick Mayadi told South Sudan in Focus yesterday that after several discussions with the management of Inside Security about paying assorted government fees and employee benefits and pensions, nothing much materialized. The Juba City Council reported the matter to the Minister of Interior yesterday. Mayadi says the Minister of Interior ordered the deportation of 4 British and 16 Kenyans.
Today the Minister of Interior have taken the decision. He deported them, 16 Kenyans, so they are now deported. And when before they leave the country, they are supposed to pay all the dues which the government won from them, and the dues which the employees of Inside Security won from them.
Mayadi says the managers were given 72 hours to clear the remaining payment or face arrest. He also accused some Inside Security managers of being undercover spies for unidentified foreign countries.
We are not closing the company, but we are dealing with the culprit which are working badly to our people, which have been causing problems, because they have been reporting even the security matters, which does not concern them. They have been biased to our country, they have been biased to our tribe.
Mayadi says Inside Security guards attached to institutions and companies such as the United Nations mission in South Sudan are allowed to continue working. He says the Juba City Council will ensure that the new management of Inside Security pays them. Monrak Alor Kwal, the lawyer representing Inside Security, says he heard rumors about the possibility that some managers being deported, but says his client has yet to receive any sort of official deportation notification.
The company is very calm because they haven't received any formal communication and they are waiting for that if there is any.
Interior Ministry spokesman Major General Daniel Justin says the Juba City Council served the Minister of Interior an order to shut down Inside Security last week because the company failed to pay its national employees what they are guaranteed under their contracts, but says the ministry has not received an order to deport the foreign employees.
We have not received any official order for their deportation or something of that kind. Yes, usually deportation is done by the Honorable Minister of Interior. But so far we have not. We, the police, we are the implementers. If at all there is something of that kind, we will be informed.
Last week, the Juba City Council authorities closed Inside Security and ordered its managing director to appear in court for allegedly failing to honor contracts the firm signed with its employees. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
South Sudan's media authority was established in 2016 to protect journalists against intimidation and harassment by the government of South Sudan. But Mary Ajit, chairperson of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan and director of the Catholic Radio Network, says the media authority has moved away from its core mandate. Santino Riak Maker, the former editor of the Juba-based independent newspaper, fled to Nairobi last week due to threats from one of President Salva Kiir's bodyguards. The Independent was shut down in 2018. Maker says harassment and intimidation continues in South Sudan.
We have media laws which are supposed to guide us. And the government, that is the media authority, are not following it. When a journalist falls in problem, the media authority is not following it. Second, we have also a national security at the printing press, which is not supposed to be there.
One South Sudanese journalist who requested anonymity for fear of reprisal from security agents says the media authority appears to be working with the National Security Service to arrest journalists who appear critical of the government.
Up to now, I think they have not really lived to their expectation.
Michael Christopher, editor-in-chief of the Al-Watan Arabic newspaper, refused to apologize to the media authority after writing an opinion piece about protests in Sudan. He was arrested late in July and the media authority closed the Al-Watan newspaper. This week, Christopher was released from detention by the National Security Service without charges. Christopher says, unlike some other journalists previously held, he was neither tortured nor interrogated.
I was worried that I will be tortured, but I got a different environment. They put me in a good place for 39 days, as I was sure I had committed no crime. I was eating well, with food and water being brought from outside every day. Since I had a stomach problem, my family members were given access to visit me regularly, at least 3 times a week.
Christopher says he hopes to reopen Al-Watan newspaper after paying a registration fee of about $400 to the media authority. South Sudan security agents have ordered publishers to remove articles from several South Sudanese newspapers before they go to print. The media regulatory body has done very little to address government interference with the work of journalists. Mary Ajit, chairperson of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan and the director of the Catholic Radio Network, says a number of journalists in South Sudan have been detained but are not charged with an offense.
If a journalist is to be arrested, that has to be done as per the law. Like, the person has to be sued, there must be a case, that is fine, and then the court prosecutes the journalist. But now we are seeing that the journalists are being arbitrary. Arrested. Everyone now is being threatened.
Christopher's arrest by the national security operatives triggered criticism from civil rights groups, including the Committee to Protect Journalists. Angela Quintal, CPJ's Africa Program Coordinator, called Christopher's arrest totally unacceptable and says it is a great concern to CPJ. Quintal says arrest of journalists sends the wrong signal to the media in South Sudan, who are already operating under difficult circumstances of intimidation and self-censorship. She says the Media Authority Act guarantees media freedom and recognizes the media as a public watchdog.
It establishes the media authority so that it can actually defend and protect these freedoms, right? But unfortunately, what we have seen, and we've certainly documented cases, where I would say that the media authority, unfortunately, has actually been a direct perpetrator of press freedom violations, or they've actually been involved in violations committed by other government agencies.
John Gashier, a veteran Kenyan journalist who was involved in drafting South Sudan's media bills, says the media authority has been used by some South Sudanese government officials to muzzle the press. He says the media authority was formed to help South Sudan have a democratic media and to establish a regulatory that would protect, defend and enhance media freedom in the country.
The creation of the media authority are very disappointed that the good intentions have been hijacked, and then the media authority has become a tool to control the media.
Kong Pal, the chairperson of the South Sudan Editors Forum, a group of editors that discuss media issues in South Sudan, and the director of iRadio in Juba, says the environment for journalists has improved since the creation of the media authority.
Journalists are no longer, or media houses are no longer summoned or asked to report to the National Security Office in Juba. We are able now to address our issue to the media authority in the office, and they became actually the link between National Security and the media.
12 journalists have been killed in South Sudan since 2012. Seven of them were shot and killed in 2015 during the height of the fighting in South Sudan's 5.5-year civil war. According to this year's World Press Freedom Index, South Sudan ranked 139 out of 180 countries. Reporters Without Borders attribute this improvement to the signing of the revitalized peace agreement in September. Since 2017, media censorship has increased in South Sudan. In March 2019, the media authority temporarily shut down the Alwatan Arabic newspaper for covering months-long protests in Sudan, which led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir in April. In July 2017, the government blocked access to four news websites, Radio Tamazuj, Sudan Tribune, Nyamilipedia, and Panluelwel. VOA repeatedly sought comments from Elijah Alier Kwai, managing director at the South Sudan Media Authority, on this story, but he did not respond to repeated phone calls and email. South Sudanese youth activists are calling on young people from all walks of life to take part in nation building. At a recent panel discussion, some activists urge young people to depart from what they call culture of dependence and focus instead on rebuilding the country after the 5.5-year conflict. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at last week's panel discussion in Juba on the role of youth in building South Sudan, youth activist Nyaboth Pascal Alfred said young people rarely participate in political activities and urge youth to stop standing around tea kiosks and get involved in nation building. She says South Sudanese must no longer depend on foreigners to fix their problems.
We depend so much thinking that someone will come and save us. No one is going to save us. We have this country. We must break the stereotype of dependency, whether you like it or not, until we break the mentality that we have to wait for someone to come and save us, South Sudanese. It's not going to save us. We will continue waiting for foreign intervention in our country. So if we want to be really concerned about this country, we need to change about how we think about our country.
Another panelist, Camis Ball, a lecturer at the University of Juba, says young people must stop playing loyalty to their tribes, something he says has destroyed the country.
I want you guys to take action from today. I want you to ask yourself, what am I doing? Apart from, I know most of you are working as staff citizens. You know, I want you to ask yourself, what am I doing to bring a positive change to this nation? What am I doing with my position? What am I doing with my brilliant ideas?
Participant Joel Williams says the problem is that youth are not given a platform to discuss issues that affect them.
The majority, like 70% of the population, are young. And I think they are full of capacities. And if we get a chance of like trying to just have a platform like that one, bringing our issue and how like we should play our role there, it will be good. And then we can see change.
The panel discussion was organized by the Kamlet Street Initiative, a monthly forum aimed at discussing literary issues and the role of youth in nation building. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a minister walks out of a national dialogue meeting in Juba. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best and worst thing about the first day of school?
You get to meet new friends, you get to interact with others apart from home, but still I will still have that part of being missing my family, my siblings, all the laughter, all the jokes we've grown. So it's gonna be a bit 50-50 actually.
All in all, the worst things is also seeing it is a new environment, adaptivity matter a lot. And also you start counting down, when shall I get back, what can I do with this and that.
It is the best when I meet my friends, because it make me to socialize with them. Because if I'm alone at home, sometimes I feel lonely if there is nobody at home. But if I came and I got my friends, to feel happy to be among them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Leaders from the Equatorial region are calling on the national government to address issues of bad governance, land grabbing, tribalism, which they say are some of the root causes of instability across the country. Some 400 delegates from the former Eastern, Western and Central Equatorial states have been attending a six-day conference on the national dialogue in Juba. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital.
At the start of the Equatorial Regional Conference, Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomro stomped out of the venue protesting protocol issues at the conference. According to Beda, Martin protested because he was not properly recognized as the National Minister of Cabinet Affairs. Beda did not explain whether Martin felt he should have been included earlier in the speaker lineup or was upset about the seating arrangements.
Taking my apology to Martin, Minister, His Excellency Martin Elia, who walked out because he saw that we were not writing protocol. Tell him that we are from the grassroots.
This week's Equatorial Conference is the last phase of grassroots consultations on the national dialogue. It follows conferences recently held for the Bahr El Ghazal and Upper Nile regions. Many leaders speaking at the conference identified bad governance, a poor economy, insecurity, and a poor resource distribution as issues that must be addressed in order to put South Sudan on the path of peace and development. Paul Yugusuk, Archbishop of the Central Equatoria Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says the dialogue will likely boost implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Yugusuk says the government's priority should be to silence the guns.
There is a fighting going on in parts of South Sudan, here in Central Equatoria. There is a fighting. Recently there is fighting in Lobonok, there is fighting in Loka, in all these areas, and in other parts of South Sudan. So we also face, you know, with issues of economic. The crisis still continues. There is no improvement. Even if we have signed peace agreement.
Babiro Bamise, a delegate from Western Equatoria to the conference, says disputes over power sharing is one of the root causes of instability in the country. He suggests that a federal system of government be established to resolve such disputes.
One issue, that is, you have security personnel in every village, in everywhere, even in the bushes, but from one ethnic group. What about other ethnic groups which are also within the security? Why can't they not distribute them to be in those areas, only one particular group?
Moses Idoru, a delegate from Yei River State, agrees.
There are some leaders, principled politicians, who came out to teach their own people with ideologies that we are born to rule. To rule who? Who should be following? Until when? As slaves or as what? That is a statement which creates rebellion. And we have seen this ideology in operation until now through what is called the Council of Elders.
Barnaba Dumo, a veteran politician from the former Central Equatoria State, says South Sudanese should design a formula to distribute power equitably among the three regions of Equatoria, Bahr El Ghazal and Upper Nile. He says failure to do so is a recipe for disaster.
So when we are talking about participation in the armed forces, which is not fairly distributed, we should go for equal participation in the armed forces and in all the institutions of security and government. So when we are going for a system of governance, we already have our three regions. Let us give the three regions equal number of states. Already Upper Nile has 13 in our presence. Let all the other sectors have 13.
Michael Lopuke, a delegate from former Eastern Equatorial State, says land grabbing had become a common and urges the government to put in place measures to end the practice.
Within our regional borders, there are now new promised land. Go across the bridge that is in Gumbo here. There are some places which have been named promised land. Promise for who? Promise by who and for who? That is a point of contention. If I am evicted from Gumbo as my central land, and somebody has come to occupy it because he was promised by his ancestors that this is the land you are going to be, then that is a point that we will not have peace in this country.
Although the conference is aimed at hearing from people at the grassroots level, it is being dominated by politicians drawn from the national and state parliaments and constitutional post holders instead of ordinary people. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The outgoing United Nations chief in Zimbabwe says the current crackdown targeting opposition demonstrators and activists is, quote, intolerable because the country's constitution allows citizens to protest. The UN envoy told reporters that sanctions imposed by some Western countries are not directly responsible for Zimbabwe's slow economy. He says he also wants President Mnangagwa's government to enact policies to attract investors who are shying away from the Southern African country. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare.
In his last address to reporters in Harare, Bishop Parajuli, the outgoing UN resident coordinator in Zimbabwe, said on Wednesday he was worried that the political opposition was denied the right to protest the economy. That has been followed by a crackdown on opposition and activists.
The Constitution provides the space for people to participate in a peaceful means of demonstration. I would say all peaceful means of demonstration should not be threatened through violence means. And that can only add a negative image on Zimbabwe, frankly. Zimbabweans are very peaceful people, and that's what I have seen. And therefore, intolerant people, you know, going to people evening and mask and beating, I mean, that's absolutely intolerable. That should not be the right thing to do.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government has said it is investigating who is behind the abductions, which have left many activists injured after taking part in recent anti-government demonstrations. Tatenda Mombearara, the leader of the activist group Citizens Manifesto, is still recovering in a private hospital in Harare after he was abducted by about 10 armed men. He still insists the people who abducted, injured, tortured, and left him for dead are security forces.
The people who attacked me did it in a choreographed manner. The people who attacked me were as a unit.
Mombearara is one of the activists Harare accuses of attending a meeting in the Maldives earlier this year to plot against Mnangagwa's government. He and several other activists are facing charges of treason. Meanwhile, the outgoing UN boss in Zimbabwe urged Mnangagwa's government to continue engaging the West as part of efforts to remove sanctions imposed on the country's leadership in 2002 following reports of election rigging. Sanctions, he says, have little to do with Zimbabwe's current economic problems.
If you dissect the element of a sanction of restrictive policies, some of the countries which have restrictive policy are the largest supporter of Zimbabwe from a humanitarian or development point of view. They care Zimbabwe. But I think the major challenge in my perception has been, you know, wrong policies.
The UN diplomat urged the Zimbabwe government to enact investor-friendly laws and to continue engaging countries that impose sanctions on senior officials of the government and some state-owned companies in 2002. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A wildlife conference has adopted dozens of resolutions aimed at protecting animal and plant species threatened by extinction. CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, also tackled illegal international trade that threatens their survival. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from CITES Conference in Geneva.
The United Nations reports about 1 million animal and plant species worldwide are threatened with extinction. The conference has responded to the rapid decline of iconic animals such as the giraffe, several species of sharks, and precious timber. It has revised the trade rules for dozens of wildlife species whose sustainability is threatened by over-harvesting, overfishing, or overhunting. The conference also has expanded the capacity to fight illegal trade. CITES Secretary General Yvonne Higuero says illegal traders remain a force to be reckoned with. She praises the actions taken by representatives at the conference to combat the growing menace posed by the rapid pace with which wildlife crime is moving online.
For example, you adopted decisions on strengthening enforcement efforts for tortoises and freshwater turtles. You will also support efforts to tackle illegal trade in the subregions of West and Central Africa. This illegal trade affects elephant ivory and species such as pangolins, parrots, and rosewood. Another important decision was to establish the CITES Big Cat Task Force.
The task force, she explains, has a mandate to improve enforcement, tackle illegal trade, and promote collaboration on conserving tigers, lions, cheetahs, jaguars, and leopards. The illegal trade in wildlife is estimated to be worth up to $20 billion a year. Higuero says more needs to be done to assist countries to strengthen their criminal justice systems. She says more vigorous action will have to be taken to combat wildlife crime linked to the Internet, which in today's digital world seems likely to increase.
I am pleased to note that CITES has now started to open a new digital front, both to more effectively regulate legal trade and to combat illegal trade. This will lead to more efficient border controls using modern technology-based approaches such as electronic risk management and targeted inspections.
CITES has some success stories under its belt. It notes vicuna populations in Bolivia, Peru, and parts of Argentina have been revived through sustainable use. Because of this, the conference has downlisted a regional vicuna population in Argentina, this from Appendix 1, which bans all commercial trade in at-risk species, to Appendix 2, which permits sustainable trade. The recovery of the American crocodile population of Mexico, which is seen as another conservation success, has been similarly downlisted to Appendix 2. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Koffi Olomide's latest single entitled Papa Guasoma.
Good day, Papa Falcone. Yambalo yo yaka na Bible. Nakolo bate, site miza yanzambe. Alo bakate, misala imona na kakaka. Le grand moine, R.O. Nathani Bumba, zero faute.
Elenga limono yo mekae, elengi.
Kaya kaya musa.
Elenga limono na tukae, elengi.
Joseph Bertier.
Lokolo asoso la losoe, lokolo.
Le papa wa hajenango.
Elenga limono yo mekae, elengi.
Lucia
Ibata.
Elenga limono na tukae,
elengi. Mama Rifana
We have been listening to Koffi Olomide with the song Papa Guasoma. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Masoko,
masoko,
Kronye mupwenge gongo. Kronye mupwenge gongo.